What is up? Welcome to another edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. I'm Marcus Grant, joined by Dwayne McFarland. And here we are, Dwayne. We are in the almost the middle of April. I mean, we're getting on to mid-April. We are a couple weeks away from the NFL draft. I know the supermodel is up and running. I know we're going to talk some tight ends, but the countdown is on. How are we feeling here 2.5 weeks or so from the draft?
I'm feeling good. The supermodel is going to be done before the draft, which was always priority number one. can we make the timelines? I have it done. It's funny. I was just chatting with James before the show, but it's just, I love doing this work. Like, I love working on the model stuff. And you never know, honestly, Marcus, where some of it's going to lead. You know, you may go down a rabbit hole thinking there might really be something there. You spend hours doing the data research. Then you come back, you get the data pulled into your database. You get it set up where you can actually test it against future production in the league. And you're like, wow, that sucks. I thought there might be something. There's nothing. But I enjoy that. You know, I enjoy that, you know, that journey. You know, it wouldn't be fun, like, if just everything you looked at, like, turned out to be, you know, worth something putting in the model. So it's just a scratch, you know, like, that we get to, you know, or an itch that you get to scratch, if you will, like, in the off season that you don't always have time for in the season. So I'm just really trying to, like, embrace it and be thankful for it. But yes, the culmination point is the NFL draft, because our goal is to really have, you know, the best information possible, you know, that we can have. We're going to still make mistakes, but, like, put our best foot forward so that we can help people get their arms around the rookies and what that means for fantasy this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say that, you know, this job, especially the off season, is sort of, you know, it's in a science sort of terminology, right? This is our time where we're putting our theories together and we're, you know, we're kind of working out the experiment. And then the season is sort of when, like, these things kind of go into effect and we see whether or not our theories worked or, you know, where maybe we need to tweak for the future. And I mean, you know this as well as anybody, especially on a week-to-week basis, as we get more data and more information, we kind of start to tweak our theories a little bit. And, you know, maybe sometimes what we think is right, and maybe sometimes we realize that we need to kind of course correct.
Yeah. And I encourage people, like, that. There's a lot of great content creators that do a great job in this space, you know, around models. And honestly, like, it's something that I really take to heart because, you know, I want our content to hold up, you know, to how well some of those other things are. But I will say that by understanding how some of the different models in the space work, like, I think that there's a plus there for you as a fantasy player. So obviously we want you to look at all the fantasy life stuff. I think we've put a lot of great work into this and differentiating the model, not just to make it different, but to make it better. But there are so many people that are good at this work. So I just, you know, I really invite people to make sure that they're checking out all that, get a good balanced view on all these players, because it's something I certainly think about. I wouldn't even create this model if I didn't think that we could really put out something quality, because there's already so much good stuff out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, that old NBC, the more you know, like, the more information you can kind of collect, the better informed and maybe the better fantasy player or better you are going to be. But let's dive into the supermodels for the tight ends, because, look, I know that this year's group of tight ends maybe isn't as sexy as the group we had last year, but there are a couple of really interesting names that we will get to. But first, let's just start with the basics, your methodology and how you come together with the supermodel.
Yeah, so I mean, what I do essentially is every offseason I'm trying to test new variables, Marcus. So, and all I'm testing them against is future NFL production, this dirty little thing we call fantasy points. But guys, it's really all the same. NFL teams want to draft a tight end that can go get a lot of yards, score touchdowns, help their offense. I think it's so funny that we get this whole society of, oh, well, you're a fantasy person, you're a real NFL person. At the end of the day, we all want to find prospects that can go forward in the league and get yards and touchdowns and catches, like, earn targets. Those are the things that are ultimately going to make you good in fantasy and make you good at real life football. So there's really a lot more common between those two things, but that's what I'm testing against. And essentially I'm looking for things that carry the most correlation. And once I'm done with that, like, I typically have a list, right, of here are all the things that test the most, you know, that test the best, right, against future production. Well, then I have to test all those variables against one another to see where the overlap is, because the thing you don't want, a lot of times inherently, you know, like, oh, I could use yards per team pass attempt, or I could use yards per route run. They're going to have a lot of overlap. It's mostly driven by receiving yards. And so you're looking for variables that help you get the broadest picture of the prospect. You know, you want to try to round out all the corners. But at the same time, you don't want something that's going to have, you know, a lot of overlap, and you want strong signal. And I will at times trade off a data point that may have slightly stronger signal because it overlaps so much for one with slightly less signal, but the overlap is less between those metrics. So once I've gone through that process, then I use basically the things that correlate the most strongly to the future. That's how I calibrate the model. Those things get appropriate weighting, and then that all comes together for one score, and we put it on a scale of 0 to 1, you know, or we're indexing it, you know, and you get an index number for all these key, you know, inputs, you know, that are in the model. And I try to also keep it pretty simple, because like once you get too many things in the model, like you're just inherently going to still get overlap. Like it's just, it's almost impossible. I think that's a challenge that all people that are making these models have to go through. But I think you can tell some of the ones where people have really put in a lot of thought into it, because honestly, their list will be a little bit shorter. They won't have like 20 inputs in their model.
I got to ask, I mean, has it changed, you know, the way the inputs go, or at least the results that you're getting out, because tight end has sort of changed now that, you know, we see more guys who are ready to come in and maybe produce at an earlier, you know, at an earlier point in their career where they have in the past. I know there's still a learning curve, but I'm just wondering, you know, what has the change at the tight end position done for your model?
Well, they're still pretty much the same input. So this, and just to clarify, so because we're using a lot of advanced data to normalize these players, I think that one of the big things you've got to do to really try to take these models forward in the future is you've got to normalize for quarterback play, for their teammates. You've got to normalize for like, hey, what style of offense do they play in? Because if they don't throw the ball a lot, or they do throw the ball a lot, well, expectations should be very different for that player. And once you've normalized those things, I think we can go pretty far back and it looks okay. But because we're using these advanced data components, like average depth of target is a requirement in the data set for me because I'm normalizing by ADOT. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't really find that data. Like before 2014, that's when PFF really started putting it out. It's really hard to find target data as well before that. So really, if you look at it, I've only got enough data right now to go back to the 2018 class and say that I can actually tell you about the entire career of the players that came out in 2018. Well, then I have to cut it off in time to say, well, we've got to have at least 2 years in the NFL so we can test against, you know, how well they performed in those first two seasons. So right now the data, the model is set up on 2018 to 2022. So I have had a model in the past that went back further, and I'm using some different measurements, so it's hard to exactly answer your question like with 100% confidence, but mm-hmm. a lot of the same things are still there, but now it's changing because I'm able to normalize for factors I wasn't able to normalize for in the past. And it's honestly, I mean, we'll talk about the inputs here in a second, but it's made a huge difference for the tight end supermodel. The tight end model was used to be the, I don't want to say it was the worst, but it was the weakest, had the weakest correlation to future fantasy success. So, and the gold standard is you want to measure it against NFL draft pick, right? So the raw NFL draft pick, oh, a player went pick 16, correlation is 0.58 to future fantasy success. But if you look at the supermodel without draft capital in it at all, just taking their production metrics, their athleticism, and their pedigree, which we'll talk about those in a second, 0.65. So the model itself is actually stronger than NFL draft pick. That is really big. If you can get to that spot, you know that you're doing something right in your data. Now, sample size can be everything. We could get another class next year. Also, I'll be able to look at the 2023 class, which did have Sam Laporta, Dalton Kincaid, so we could get some new insights. These things can move around a little bit each year, so I don't want to sit here and be like, oh my God, we're like better than the NFL. No, right now, based on this sample, it's very encouraging what we're getting with the model. And then once you add draft capital into the model, you go to a 0.71 correlation versus that 0.58 for just draft picks. So I feel really good about where the model is, but a lot of it does come back to the enhancements we've been able to make around normalizing the data. Honestly, the way I'm normalizing for age now is different than in the past. It used to be based on breakout thresholds and things like that, but now everything is all blended because we know breakouts aren't binary. We're not using, you know, a lot of people that play Dynasty might recognize the term, you know, dominator, which is essentially you take, you know, a player's percentage of the team's yards, their percentage of the team's touchdowns, you divide that by two, you get their dominator rating. That's out. We're now fully focused on yards per receiving yards per team passing attempt, which we're going to call RIPTA, Marcus. We're just going to go with it. We're going to go with RIPTA.
RIPTA
is what we're going to call that. But that that metric accounts for almost half their grade. It's huge for production, and it's adjusted for age, and then it's also adjusted for average depth of target. It's adjusted for their quarterback play. If you don't play with a good quarterback, your expectations are lower. If you play with a really great quarterback, your expectations actually go up, and this is based on the data. So now we're looking at an over or under expected number we're getting from each of these players, and it's just bringing a lot of clarity to the tight end position that I just haven't had, you know, in the past.
All right. So there you go. There's sort of the outline on the methodology, some of the inputs and that sort of thing. So let's kind of dive in.
And if people want that whole thing, it's all up on the site, guys. You can go check it out. You can check out tier 1, 2, and 3. All are up. So that's all of the tight ends. You can also go to the tool section, go down to Dynasty and click on Rookie Model. And we have included for you all the way back to 2018, all the tight ends and how they scored in the model, plus the 2024 class. And down at the bottom of that page, you get a full detail of the methodology and all of the inputs. So multiple places you can go find that information if you're wanting even more than what we gave you here today.
Of course, find it all at fantasylife.com. And then it's a convenient spot to say while you're there, go sign up for the newsletter if you haven't already. I was reading it this morning as I was drinking my coffee and helping my kid get ready for school. So let's talk about some of these prospects, though, because there is one guy who is head and shoulders above the rest in this class. He is your tier one guy. I'm assuming he is the tier one. It is Brock Bowers.
He is the tier one.
Right. He is the tier one. I mean, it's funny. We talk about prospect fatigue, right? People talk about Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. when it comes to prospect fatigue. Maybe it's because tight end doesn't generally have a lot of immediate breakout stars, but I'm surprised because we've been hearing about Brock Bowers for a couple of years now at Georgia. I don't sense the prospect fatigue with him, which, look, I'm happy about that because he is good. But what exactly did the supermodel tell you about how good Brock Bowers is?
Well, second highest mark that we've ever seen in the supermodel behind only Kyle Pitts. And if Brock Bowers does decide to run tomorrow, he is hosting teams. He did not run at the Georgia Pro Day due to a hamstring. If he runs and he runs a 4.5 somewhere around there, which is what he ran back at the Nike Spark camps back in the day. If you go read about it, you'll see that he was not really that well known of a prospect. And he came out there and ran a 4.50 and all the teams were like, oh, wow. Well, he ends up with 22 offers from pretty much all the best tight end schools. You know, Notre Dame offered him, you know, Alabama offered him. I mean, all the big programs, LSU, Clemson, he pretty much could have gone anywhere he wanted. So this is a guy 83rd percentile in the model. That's the second best ever. Also in the model without draft capital, because it has performed ahead of draft of NFL draft pick. He is also the second highest prospect that we have ever seen. So like the first area that I look at with these guys, Marcus, is the pedigree. You heard me just mention it. So he went to Georgia, and the way this works is we look back at how well these programs have been at producing future tight ends. And the way we do that is by, well, how many guys did they have taken in the draft? And each draft pick gets a specific value associated with it, which we'll call draft capital. And that's based on Chase Stewart's work. And he put out a chart that's essentially like a better version of the old Jimmy Johnson trade chart. So every draft pick has an assigned value. And the really important thing to note with it is that it's logarithmic. And it's not a linear path downward. So what you have is the first pick in the draft is worth way more than like the fourth pick. But by the time you get to the end of round two, things start to level out. So there won't be as much difference in the model because draft capital is still the number one input in the model, but it's more important for these early picks. And so anyway, when you're looking at pedigree, that's what's happening there. We're looking at the programs that have produced the most points over the past 7 years as far as who's come out in the NFL draft. And so Georgia comes out at the 55th percentile. So that's what that means whenever you see that. And the other thing that we're looking at is what's his expected draft capital? Well, he's right now being mocked at pick 10, round one. So that's really good. That's obviously a little bit behind where Kyle Pitts was, but he would be, you know, potentially the third guy taken inside the top 10 picks, you know, since 2018. That's Kyle Pitts and TJ Hawkinson. So those things grade out really well, you know, for Bowers. And obviously to score as well as he did, you have to do well in all the components, but the next part is really production and athleticism. And we talked about RIPTA. So adjusted career RIPTA, which takes all those factors we talked about into consideration, Marcus, he's in the 100th percentile.
Wow.
He's better than anyone. So from a production score since 2018, Brock Bowers is the best tight end that we have seen. Now we also want to know, okay, great. that's in context of the team, because that's receiving yards per team passing attempt. But there's also, okay, well, how good were you when you were targeted? And a number that really jumped to the forefront for me in the research this year, and I want to give a hat tip to Peter Howard, PA Howdy. You guys can find him over on Twitter. He's always researching stuff like this. He's a great dynasty guy, great NFL prospect guy. And I would say nobody grinds harder at just like testing new things out than he does. And what I loved about this is it didn't have super high correlation to RIPTA. It was different enough. Well, why? Because you have touchdowns included, you have interceptions, but it's career targeted quarterback rating. So it's when the quarterback targeted you, how good were you with the ball in your hands? And so if you think about how quarterback rating gets, you know, calculated, it makes sense, right? That it would be an additive data point to a more team-based data point like RIPTA. So 92nd percentile in that. So, I mean, he's grading out really highly. And then the speed score index, I had to use a replacement, you know, score based on his weight and the history of the combine. And it's 44th percentile, which is way lower than the 4.50 he ran. So this is it's a placeholder. I'm really hoping that he runs tomorrow, Marcus, because if he does, we'll update this. But he'll move even closer to where Kyle Pitts was in the model.
So obviously he is, like you said, he is the tier one. He is head and shoulders above everybody else. He is the guy that for fantasy we are hoping goes to a good landing spot where he doesn't have to worry about sharing time and sharing targets at the tight end spot. We don't want another Dalton Kincaid sort of Dawson Knox situation with him. Keeping our
the biggest risk for him would be, you know, landing somewhere where they do have a really good blocking tight end, and that turns him into, your point, you know, more of a rotational guy. Yeah. And it just can happen to guys, you know, earlier in their career. It went really well for Sam Laporta last year, but when you saw the landing spot, you were kind of like, well, I mean, James Mitchell, like, I don't think right. he's going to play in front of Sam Laporta, and you're like, Brock Wright. You know, I mean, even as close as that sounds to block right, I don't think he's going to be on the field a lot more. So I think Bowers, you know, landing spot will definitely matter. To your point, I don't think that he is, you know, landing spot proof just because we know what happens with tight ends sometimes younger in their career. I do think that he's pretty much a lock to be really good in the future. A couple of other quick notes on him. Really good against man and zone coverage. His targets per route run against man, 20%. That's 3 percentage points ahead of his peers for guys with at least 250 routes over their career. Zone, 25%. That's plus 10 percentage points. And really, if you look at the way that Georgia utilized him, Marcus, they used him all over the field. They got him the ball behind the line of scrimmage. They got him the ball down the seam. 31% of his targets came behind the line of scrimmage. That was 20 percentage points higher than a normal tight end. But that also just emphasizes, like, I mean, you're talking about Georgia. This is a loaded program, and they're trying to figure out any way possible to get the ball to their tight end behind the line of scrimmage. So that tells you a little bit more about him as an athlete. And that can be a red flag if that's like the only way a player gets the ball. But he was also like as a 20 plus yards down the field guy. So someone, you know, getting deeper, 12% of his targets. So that was, you know, also above the, you know, NCAA average. So a guy that's very diverse. He can beat man. He can beat zone. He can attack all areas of the field. So I think it's just going to be only a matter of time. Do we get it in year one based on that landing spot you talked about? And just to give a little bit of history. So, you know, right now the supermodel is including a projected draft capital of pick 10, but top 12 finishes in year one or by year one or two, 100% of the time for guys that do this in the model. Now I want to caveat that with not many people score as high as what Brock Bowers said. So it's not a huge sample size. But even if you look at him in the model just without draft capital, 67% of the time, those guys have a top 12 finish. So I think there's a really good chance for him to do it in year one. If not, it feels like a near lock in year two that you're going to get that from Bowers. And I think, you know, the biggest question with him is, let's say Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers are off the board in your rookie draft. I think that's the spot where it's the question. Are you going Odunze or are you going with Brock Bowers? What are your thoughts?
I would tend to lean Bowers just because tight end, even if it's getting deeper, is still a relatively thin position that you can still find help at wide receiver. You know, you can come back later in that same draft. You can go find wide receivers kind of in a lot of places. Finding a tight end with that sort of ceiling is a little bit harder to do. So I think I would probably value Bowers a little bit more. You know, and this is not a knock on Odunze. This is just more about, you know, the famous words, positional value. Yeah. There's a little bit more there, I think, for Bowers than there is for Odunze right now. And that's it.
Yeah, I think it's a good, you know, spot to where either way you go, I get it with whatever. I think you could argue, well, wide receivers have a higher fantasy point upside overall, and I think that's true. But to your point, like the positional scarcity of the position, and eventually Travis Kelce's going to be gone. I mean, he can't keep going on forever. If Bowers does end up being anything like Kelce, which is really hard to say, you can never really comp anyone to Kelce. Like, he's so elite. But if he did get to that ceiling, to your point, we've seen what an advantage that has been for people that can differentiate so much at a position where it can be tough to actually, you know, differentiate from your competition.
The other part of it, if he really does go number 10 with the Jets sitting in that spot, I don't know that the Jets have had a fantasy relevant tight end maybe in my lifetime. I mean, like, I always go back and try to look, like, they have just traditionally punted on that position. So it would be interesting to have.
What was it? We thought they might have one a while. I don't know. I feel like maybe like 2007, 2008. Was it Keller? Last name Keller?
Yeah, Dustin Keller.
Dustin Keller. I think that was the last one I remember being like excited about. Like,
yeah,
for the Jets. But since then, yeah, not even a whiff.
They've basically just punted on that position for a long time. So this would be interesting. All right. So now to the tight ends that aren't named Brock Bowers. Tier two. Jatavion Sanders out of the University of Texas, a guy who really has kind of gotten some buzz. You describe him as a guy who has role traits with room to grow into a low-end tight end one. What did you see, especially considering we've talked about players from Texas. We talked about Xavier Worthy. We talked about A.D. Mitchell being sort of hard to figure just because of the way the offense sort of worked. How did you or what did you find out when you dove into the numbers with Sanders?
Yeah, so with the model, it does account for your teammates in a couple of ways. One, based on the program that you're playing at. And then number two, really looking at, you know, RPTA of your teammates. So if you've got other guys that are posting these elite RPTA numbers, you do get essentially the bar is lowered for you and what the expectation for you from a production standpoint is. And Jatavion Sanders did really well from that perspective. So it's a really good point that you're bringing up. I mean, he plays with Xavier Worthy, who broke out as a freshman. And then you get Adonai Mitchell transferring over from Georgia, and you play a year with him as well. And so when you put it all together, 0.57 yards per team pass attempt or RPTA over expected for Jatavion Sanders. So that was a positive thing for him in the model. I think the biggest thing people struggle with Sanders is he was so highly thought of. This is a 5 of 5-star recruit. It's really tough to get 5 stars. I mean, we have a lot. Most guys that go in the first round are 4 or 5 stars. Mostly most guys are 4 stars, but he's projected right now to go in round 2, pick 40. But he does get a bump because of what you just talked about. The problem is he never fully lived up to, you know, that expectation of being a 5-star prospect. He was a wide receiver in high school. He came out as, you know, that he got that athlete designation, which is kind of tweeners, not sure where you're going to put him. You're going to play him at tight end, play him at wide receiver. He ended up making the move to tight end at Texas. And then he just really, you know, he ended up doing well, Marcus, but it took a little bit of time and he never truly broke out in a big way. So he had a non-existent role as a freshman, but he scores above average in the supermodel for production, you know, based on the career adjusted RPTA, just because like he was still at least consistent enough. And in the model, it cares the most about years 2 and 3. Like that's what correlates the most to future fantasy success. It's not as important for tight ends to break out as freshmen as it is for wide receivers. And it also doesn't count against you if you do well in year 4, which it does for wide receivers. Year 5, you get a negative correlation to future success, -0.04 to production in your first 2 seasons. But when you look at Jatavion Sanders, I think, again, the big struggle is like he was so highly thought of, he didn't quite live up to that, but he's still been pretty good. I think there are some red flags in his profile. And obviously, I mean, he comes out at the 48th percentile in the model. We just got through talking about Brock Bowers, you know, who came out in the 83rd percentile. There's a huge gap between these two players. So normally, like you could have, I mean, other tier two players above where we are with Jatavion Sanders sandwiched in between these guys. But tier two happens to become this tier this year because there's no one really in between these guys. And I do want to mention, like, we've seen, it's funny that you mentioned some guys earlier. You mentioned Dawson Knox. Like, that's actually a comp in this thing for Jatavion Sanders based on where he scored in the model. But there are definitely some red flags. You know, 15% targets per route run, you know, against man covers, that's 2 percentage points below just the average collegiate tight end, not ones that got drafted, just the average college tight end. His 1.26 yards per route run against man was also lower. And then, you know, again, you got to consider the fact that Xavier Worthy was an absolute, you know, beast. Man coverage, Xavier Worthy had a 32% targets per route run. But at the same time, it's like, okay, great. Xavier Worthy was good, but like Jatavion Sanders still, he still has to stand on his own, right? And carve out more of that work. So he was really more only used against zone coverage. So that concerns me a little bit as far as like how much upside is in the profile. And then I think the other thing is people just hoped he would run faster, Marcus. So, I mean, he's just, again, based on being a five-star prospect, I don't want to say Jatavion Sanders had a bad college career. He didn't, but it just, he kind of missed the bar on expectations across the board. Only a 40th percentile in speed score, which takes your weight and your 40 combine, takes your 40 time from the combine or your pro day. We take the best one and it combines those two things together. So, you know, if you look at the hit rates on guys around him, it's not bad, Marcus. Like if he ends up still going in the second round, like they project him right now in mock drafts, I mean, 38% of those guys go on to have a top 12 finish. 25% of them post a top 9 finish in their first two seasons. But if you look at him without draft capital, just the straight up model before you put draft capital in, the model's not crazy about Jatavion Sanders. Only 5% of those guys make it in as a top 12 finish. So draft capital is really going to be huge for him. If he doesn't go in round two and he suddenly falls to round three, which I think is a possibility because he didn't do anything like super particularly well, like he didn't run really fast. He's not great against man. He was okay against zone. Like all the things were kind of like, okay, like this guy might be a, you know, maybe he could turn into our third target on our team. Like I think that's like where a team would be hoping for Jatavion Sanders. But the other risk, man, is like, again, this is a passing down player. So he's got to land on a team that's now suddenly going to find a way to get him on the field all the time. I mean, you and I know like history is littered with these passing down tight ends that never get to play a full role. I mean, they are all over the league. So I think when you look at it like that, you got to think of names like Kylan Granson, you know, who had some nice things in his profile, but he doesn't get to play all the time. And I think that's a big risk for Sanders. He's going to have to either land perfect in the right scheme or make really big steps, you know, in his all-round game to find a way to get on the field more at the next level.
Yeah. And look, I've been seeing and hearing a lot of people sort of talk him up a little bit, but to your point, I think a lot of people understand that there's some development that still has to happen with him wherever he lands, whenever he gets on the field. But obviously, as you mentioned, played in a big program, played with some receivers who were very good and very productive. And people like the traits, they just have to figure out how to kind of make them work at the NFL level there. Hey, golf fans, are you ready for the first major event of the year? You can get ready to see new players and legends alike fighting for the green jacket. Now, for this weekend's golf tournament, we've teamed up with DraftKings Sportsbook. And right now, all new customers who bet just $5 will get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Just download the DraftKings app now. The crown is yours. That's right. New customers can bet just $5 on anything, receive $150 in bonus bets instantly. Stay in on the action. Use your $150 in bonus bets on DraftKings same game parlay for a shot at an even bigger payout. You can combine multiple bets together from the same game. Now, if sports betting is not yet available in your state, do not worry. You can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy and have the shot to win cash prizes. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers can use our promo code DEBRIEF and bet just $5 on any wager. Get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code DEBRIEF only at DraftKings Sportsbook. All right, we'll keep going down the list of the tight ends in Dwayne's supermodel, which, of course, you can find over at fantasylife.com. The first couple of tiers are out, but let's dive into tier three because you've got a good number of players here, which I think is where probably a good chunk of the draft prospects will land is three and below. More role trait tight ends, but not projected for strong draft capital. So these are guys who will, you know, probably be late day two, more likely day three sort of guys in the draft this year that will try to fill a role on their respective teams. Let's start with Theo Johnson out of Penn State. You know, Penn State recently has given us guys like Mike Gesicki, Pat Freiermuth. You like the traits, it seems like, but the production is what scares you a little bit.
Yeah. So Theo's one of these, you know, really mixed profiles. Does not have a great production profile. His adjusted career RIPTA, 24th percentile. Remember, we just talked about 100th percentile for Brock Bowers. Right. Theo Johnson's on the opposite end of that spectrum. However, he did go to Penn State, 85th percentile in the program quality index due to some of the players you talked about. Nagasecki's not really turned in anything. I think Pat Freiermuth has definitely flashed, you know, but has also dealt with quite a bit of target competition, not very good quarterback play in Pittsburgh. And don't forget, old Brenton Strange was also a round two pick. All those guys were round two picks. So that's mainly what the model cares about from a pedigree standpoint. So that's good for Theo Johnson. He was also a four-star recruit coming out, expected to go somewhere in round four of the NFL draft. But I could see a team falling in love with him because he does have something that stands out. Teams tend to glom on to if they've got one thing like Marcus that they can put, that they can hang their hat on around a player, they get excited. Well, if you look at Theo Johnson, 9.93. RAS score, so relative athletic score. That's the ninth best score for any tight end since 1987. Now, RAS doesn't carry a high correlation to future fantasy success in the model, but that's the kind of thing a team could get excited about. But what does carry a strong correlation to future production is speed score. And he has the 81st percentile score in the model, so that's really nice. Career targeted quarterback rating index. Remember, this is a nice pairing with the adjusted RIPTA because RIPTA is more of a how did you do in context of your team, but the targeted quarterback rating is really how did you do when you got your opportunities, and he came out in the 81st percentile. So I could see a team telling themselves, you know, the dude tested out really well in the combine. He's shown us he's athletic. When he got his chances at Penn State, he did a lot with them because the quarterback rating was great. And he comes from a good program where we've seen these guys get churned out. And maybe it's time to hit on one of these guys from Penn State. So I think Theo Johnson, you know, is a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if a team fell in love with him and we hear him go sooner than we than this round four says. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he went at the end of round two, because that's just the way these teams think about it. Look, it's not perfect. It's not a rosy picture. Obviously, he comes out, you know, at the 36th percentile overall in the supermodel, so that's not great. But when you pair his efficiency, you know, you look at his, speed score, and you look at these things, and you put it all together. So over the last six drafts, Marcus, there are four tight ends with an adjusted career RIPTA index of 30 or lower and a speed score index of 70 or higher. The names are Dawson Knox, Jelani Woods, Chig Okonkwo, and Darnell Washington. So Knox at least played for a while. Yeah. You know, he gave you some low end tight end one production. Jelani Woods has really been hurt. Chig's a guy, when he's given the chance, he's flashed. He's just never been, you know, in a situation where, again, pass catching tight ends finding their way into a full time role, getting 80-85% route participation, it's tough. Darnell Washington, it's only 1 year in, landed on a team where you've already got Pat Freiermuth. So that was the group of comps based on, you know, hey, really athletic, did a lot when he had the ball in his hands, but overall career production profile was not very good. If you look at the hit rates, even with draft capital, 5% of these have top 12 finishes. He actually graded out better without the draft capital because he's being expected to go in round four. So if he ends up going more like that round two value that I said, I mean, he'll make a big jump up the board. He could pass Jatavion Sanders. Like, I can see these two guys actually being like two ships passing in the night, like after the draft happens, like Theo Johnson, say he goes at the end of round two, and then Jatavion Sanders falls to the end of round three. Like these, the way we have these tiered, it's going to flip. All of a sudden, Theo Johnson will be alone in tier three or in tier two, and you're going to have Jatavion Sanders join the tier three group. So draft capital really matters for Theo Johnson in a similar way to what we talked about with Jatavion Sanders.
All right. So Theo, we'll wait to see where his potential landing spot could be. Next up on your list, you got Cade Stover, a guy who kind of switched positions during his college career. But what did the supermodel feel like when they took a look at Stover?
Yeah, guys like this are tricky, you know, for the model, but ultimately the model doesn't care. It's like the honey badger. It doesn't care, Marcus. It's saying that you still need to break out earlier is better than later. We didn't get that out of Stover, regardless of the fact that he started as a linebacker and then he switched over to the tight end position. But it does like the fact that, you know, he was a strong recruit that comes out of Ohio State. So Ohio State has got a really good pedigree, ranking 70th percentile. This is a guy that is looked at as a round three pick right now, late round three pick in mock draft, or sorry, around mid round 3 pick right now in mock drafts. So if he goes there, like, he's going to have a chance, but like his adjusted career RIPTA, 24th percentile, kind of similar to Theo Johnson, but was good when he was targeted, 79th percentile as far as his career targeted quarterback rating. And then if you look at his speed score, 50th percentile. So not quite the athlete as Theo Johnson. So he comes in a little bit lower, similar hit rates to what you would look at with Theo Johnson. But when you take draft capital out of the model likes Theo Johnson way more than it likes Cade Stover. So it, again, the model could be underrating Cade Stover because it's hard to handle things like this where you make a position change. There can always be outliers. There are people that prove these sorts of models wrong. Models are built to basically say, hey, what typically is successful, and let's weight those things. There's always going to be people that fall out that outside the range of that. And a guy that switched positions coming, you know, that has pretty good pedigree, like he could be the type of player to do that. So, I mean, he's a guy I'm still willing to take a swing on, like in tight end premium dynasty or rookie leagues, but I'm not going to make that pick anytime early, right? It's just, it's a guy that if you could throw it on your taxi squad, see what happens for a year or two, I think right. that, you know, he kind of fits that bill.
Yeah, you know, definitely a kind of a, you know, I guess in baseball, the term would be draft and follow, or, you know, you draft and sort of,
yeah,
you sort of see what's going to happen down the road before you actually really make a commitment to having him be like a regular consistent contributor to your lineup. Ben Sinnott. Hopefully I get that. Didn't butcher that too badly. I apologize, Ben, but 29th percentile, didn't really love the traits, I assume, but the production was sort of hard to ignore.
So this guy's the opposite of Theo Johnson, you know, was not great from a speed score or anything like that. But of this group we've just talked about, his adjusted career RIPTA was 51st percentile. And guys, when you look at this, you got to remember that this is indexing for and the way an index works is you've got your very top possible score, your bottom score, right, in the model, which could say for this, for simplicity, it's a one and it's a zero. Okay. And then what you're doing is you're looking at where this prospect, you know, falls along that continuum. And so 51st percentile isn't always bad. Don't think of that as being average. It could actually be above average. And it is in this case. So his adjusted career RIPTA is above average at the 51st. If the 51st percentile, it's better than that number sounds. And then his career targeted quarterback index, so when he got his opportunities, was also good at the 70th percentile. So this is a player that, you know, from a pure production measure, performed better than the rest of the guys in this tier, and he was similar to them when he got the ball in his hands. He just wasn't great from a speed score standpoint, 47th percentile. But this is a guy that came from nowhere, Marcus. I mean, he was a zero-star recruit, zero of five stars. We've talked about guys that have been four and five stars all the way. So hat tip to Mr. Ben Sinnott out of Kansas State. Like, this guy comes from a program that also doesn't have any pedigree. So despite not having any strong pedigree marks, not having the athleticism marks, he's still scoring, you know, close to these other guys in the model. Am I like super confident he's going to come out and do anything? No, I'm not. But I'm saying there's a chance. 5% of guys in his range finished with a top 12 finish in their first 2 years. So like it can happen. It can happen. Not a real high chance of happening, though.
All right. So Ben Sinnott, we are, you know, sort of, again, kind of a draft and follow, seeing what the future may hold for him. Last one we got on this list, of course, go to fantasylife.com. You can check out the supermodel, the tiers, and kind of dive into some of this in a little more in depth. Eric All. And all I'm going to say is he went to Iowa. And, you know, with the history, the recent history, even going back to like Dallas Clark, the history of Iowa tight ends, I feel like that alone is reason for us to at least be a little bit optimistic about what his NFL future could be. I know it's not a guarantee, it's not a lock, but it's just a, you know, a thing that you kind of, you know, check mark and pay attention to. But what did the supermodel say about Eric All?
Yeah, so pedigree is great. You mentioned Iowa. He did play 4 years at Michigan, and then he transferred to Iowa for his final season as a fifth year senior. So he's an older prospect, but he battled a litany of injuries. And by the way, Michigan, not too shabby on its own. So Michigan, and then, you know, you decide you're going to go to Iowa and you're good enough that they're willing to let you go play there. I still look at that as being a positive, to your point. He was a 4 of 5 star recruit, you know, coming out of high school. So this guy was, you know, thought very well of. He's got the size for the part, Marcus, 6'4", 252 pounds. Again, it's just the injuries. He had a season ending back injury 3 games into his 4th season. And then he had an ACL tear. in his final season. So this is a guy that hasn't been able to really work out. So all of his speed score index and all of that is approximated based on his size and the history. But like adjusted career RPTA, 33rd percentile, not great. Career targeted quarterback rating index, oh, pretty decent, 55th percentile. But what I like about this guy is like, once you dig in, like, and you see, okay, he was injured. He also had a COVID-19 season mixed in there. I mean, you talk about like just a rough run of luck, like in the way his career worked out from a college perspective, it makes it really tough. Like when you look at it, like, and the model doesn't necessarily like him. Like he's coming out at the 28th percentile. And mostly it's because he's got what you mentioned. He shows that he went to Iowa and Michigan. So it's the pedigree that's carrying him. But when you dig down, and I think there's good use cases to say, you know, earlier heard me say yards per route run's not in the model. Why? Because it's got such overlap with RPTA. But on a guy like this, I like looking at a measure like yards per route run and saying, okay, he was so banged up often on the field. Just what did he do when he was out there? Mm-hmm. Okay. And he performed really well. So his adjusted yards per route run career number is in the 57th percentile. So I look at that number the exact way that I handle the calculations for the RPTA number, but I just do it at yards per route run. So that's a big difference, you know, between those two things. You know, if you look at where he came out and RPTA, it was 33rd percentile. He's coming out 57th percentile in yards per route run. And the other thing that caught my attention, Marcus, is how good he was against man and zone coverage. So when this guy was out there, he dominated by tight end standards, registering a 25% targets per route run against both man and zone. Those were 8 and 10 percentage points above the average for the position. And no other prospect in this class, including Brock Bowers, was better than Eric All. Whenever you just look at the routes he ran and you look at how well he did against, you know, man and zone coverage. So when you put those things together, like I look at him, even though the models got him graded like the lowest in this tier, I think he's the one I like the most. Like now he's got to be healthy. Durability is probably going to be a concern. That can absolutely tank his draft capital because you know how teams get. They're like, oh man, like this guy's been hurt. I mean, he could, there's a scenario where he goes undrafted, wow, you know, because he's got medical stuff. Mm-hmm. But if he goes, you know, right now, what the mocks got in the latest, I'm looking, when I wrote this, it looks like it's still around round four. Okay. Which they're not changing that much right now, but like I could see a scenario where that's 6-7 undrafted. But if some team just sees him and thinks, hey, it was just a tough run of luck and he cleared all their medicals and their doctors have signed off on him, he could also be a guy that goes a little bit sooner in the draft. But out of all these guys, that we talked about in tier three, I think he's the one that, like, had he been healthy for his entire career, I think he probably would have graded out as a separate tier two guy above Jatavion Sanders. It would have bumped Jatavion Sanders down to a tier three group in this class. And then the guys we just got through talking about would have probably been tier four. Now I'm speculating. I can't say any of this stuff for sure, but the yards per route run, targets per route run, they're still fairly strong indicators, not as strong as RPTA is, but those are the things that I liked about him. So he's a guy that if you're in a deep dynasty league or a deep rookie draft, and, you know, especially if it's tight end premium, like he's a name that I definitely want to be tacking on at the end of those sort of drafts. Expectations for this season, not high, not high at all.
Well, and I think that's fair when you talk about the guys who are projected this late in the draft, right? For whatever reason it is that there's a little bit more, I think, of a speculative look at some of these guys where you kind of find the traits that you like that you think are going to help him at the next level. But understanding, as you mentioned, we talk about it with every position, because the draft capital is not going to be high, that gives, you know, makes it a steeper hill to climb for this player to get on the field to potentially be productive. The leash will not be as long as it will be for, you know, a Brock Bowers potentially going high in the first round or something like that. So
it's just fun writing paragraphs about a name with the last name All. And, you know, what doesn't matter what program you're using to kind of be editing your stuff along the way, it's freaking out. It's like, you're using All too much. This is the word All. Why is it? Yeah, it's like, you know, it's just saying the word All over and over. It even kind of trips yourself out. You're like, oh, well, I guess he's just always good. I don't know.
There it is. I'm sure Grammarly probably, you know, has a
that's who I'm using. Grammarly was flipping out on me.
Right. Starts to, you know,
Jalen Hurts and now Eric All are they're the two nemesis of Grammarly. Like they love to go to battle with Grammarly.
Well, that
Fields, you know, Fields is the other one. Fields, another one, Hurts, and now
Love,
all.
Love is, you know, can get in there a little
bit.
Too,
Love and so. Too. Yeah.
So, the joys of writing copy in the age of technology. So there you go. Just to look at the tight ends. What is next for the supermodel?
Working on the running backs right now. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, pulled a bunch of new data in. I'd been working on the data for really like the last 5 weeks. But found a couple of extra things I wanted to test. You know, once I get it all set up and I have a little bit more time to think about it, if I have the time, I will test a few more things, which I did yesterday for running back. And I think I found something that'll go in. But yeah, so today I'll just be calibrating them. I'm pretty much decided on the inputs for the model based on that process I talked about earlier. And now I'll calibrate the model based on the things that matter the most. Then I will get them into a ranked form. And I will start writing. My fingers will start typing later today, Marcus. So we'll have running back supermodel will hit early next week. Not sure how many tiers we're going to have yet, but excited to find out.
There it is. So something to look forward to for next week. We'll dive into some running backs as we creep a little bit closer to the what I call the NFL's onboarding process. Where they basically introduce a bunch of new hires for the 2024 season. So we look forward to that. But, good spot for us to take a pause for this week. Thanks to James Lynch for hanging out and putting this thing together for us. Have a safe flight, sir, wherever you are off to for your next travels. But in the meantime, that'll do it for this edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. Thank you so much, as always, for hanging out. Go over to fantasylife.com, get some more information, get some more knowledge, and sign up for the newsletter as well. For Dwayne McFarland, I am Marcus Grant. Enjoy the week, everybody, and we will talk to you again real soon.